Welcome to Season 3 of Chew the Fat. This first edition is coming from the heart of Galway, from a restaurant slap bang between a gay bar and a church.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi. It's such a good waiting.
No worries. How are you?
Good.
How's Guinness Diamond?
Did you rip it up?
So many pints.
Yes.
Oh, so many pints.
The pints were flowing.
Well, I drank all the Chardonnay in the whole world.
So. Excellent.
Good.
Do you want coffee, guys?
Oh my god, yes. That would be
what
a godsend.
Black.
You want black? I'll just be happy with strong. Black or something like that, yeah.
All right, can I get 2 Americanos and a flat white, please?
Oh, I spot the Irish Times there. Anything good in it this weekend?
No, well, I forgot it was Mother's Day.
Oh dear.
So there's a bit of a meze in there.
Oh, lovely.
Which doesn't really make sense. But anyway, sure, look it.
If your mother is from the Middle East, I mean...
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
Mother, meze.
Yeah, a mother of a meze.
Yeah. As in it has a nice alliteration.
Yeah. Apart from most Irish mummies don't like spice.
No.
They're not gone on it.
No, that's a shame. Mm.
That's a crucial flaw. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's time to sit down and chat with Jess Murphy, head chef here at Kai, activist, educator, and Irish Times food writer, a New Zealand native who continues to make her mark on the Irish food scene.
But as our coffees arrive, we can't help but notice Jess dunking cold water into her Americano.
Maybe it's a control thing. How to do? Who knows?
Well, you just like to be able to bring it down a few temperatures.
Yeah, because like the thing is, most of the time when you do get a coffee and you're working in the kitchen, it goes cold anyway, so just got used to it.
And so when it comes out hot, you're like, this is unnatural, I need to fix this.
Yeah, and then if you have to work tonight and you burn your mouth, then you can't taste anything forever.
It's not ideal.
No.
Okay.
This is really difficult, actually, to think about. Yeah. That from the very moment you wake up, you have to consider everything right to the end of the day.
Magic.
Yeah.
Obviously, you aren't ever in Cafe Nero because they single-handedly burn every coffee that they make.
It is always 305 degrees,
every single cup.
Yeah.
Well, kind of my wager is I know how kind of drunk I am by the way that I burn my mouth on eating Dovermoise. That's
okay.
The scale. And then, so you know, when you burn the hole out of yourself,
it's not
a good thing.
No.
We can't speak about burns at the moment.
Oh, God, a war wound.
Yeah,
I had to come out.
What did you do?
So we were baking. Well,
no,
you were.
I was baking.
Okay. That makes no sense.
You were supervising.
I was supervising in the baking of a sourdough batch loaf. Is that what you were calling it? And you had to leave the house for a little bit, and I got a text going, oh, could you take the lid off, because it's in a pot. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. But the lid is like a little nub, so I have these gloves that are, they look like gardening gloves.
That's because they are.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay, that are for the oven. And they're wonderful most of the time. And I picked up the little nub of a lid, and it kind of went like a cartoon all over the place, and I dropped it. Yeah, and it was a choice of either if I drop the lid, in that split second, it was if I drop the lid, it's going to smash the door of the oven, and I won't have any bread.
Yeah.
And I want bread, so I'd rather burn myself. And then
so you took one for the team.
Yeah, and I'm very proud of that.
All in the quest for homemade bread. So, I mean, I think in the end, the wound was worth it.
And the whole last...
It's fight or flight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or, you know, bitch or batch, basically, you know, and I'd rather the batch, actually, to be honest. Yeah. So every time I have a moan about this, I'm like, nice bread, though.
We'll touch what I haven't burned myself for a few years, which is great.
Good.
Yeah.
How not?
I just bollock everyone to protect themselves. Yeah. I'm like, you have to protect yourself. No one... It's not cool for chefs to have burns anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I was really cool, actually. But I'm not a chef, so I'm fine.
It's kind of like that 90210 when, what's your man, Luke, had that scar on his...
Yeah.
It's kind of died with 90210, I think.
Yeah.
Damn. So, I think I'm really cool because I have scars still from the 5 years that I worked in Subway off of the toaster oven, so that's about as gnarly...
So you were a sandwich technician.
I was a sandwich artist. How dare you get my title wrong?
Sorry.
A hard-earned, artiste of the sandwich.
Well,
love it.
Yeah, I mean, so wanky. But yeah, I know how to make a good sandwich, so.
I love that when you go to a, I was out in the country, and I was like, can I have a brown demi baguette with ham, cheese, and coleslaw? And she was like, are you talking about a bun? I love it how they just refer to everything as a bun. I love that. And then I love it how suddenly butter and mayo are the same thing. Butter or mayo?
Interchangeable.
Yes. Yeah.
So, both.
Yeah.
And then it kind of like eggs you on to get both.
Yeah, of course.
Even though you are having coleslaw, it kind of really eggs you on.
It's also covered in mayo.
Double mayo.
Also, it's not butter. It's margarine. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you head over to England, I mean, the name of a roll over there is everything from a roll to a barm to a bap to a this and that.
There's a whole table
I
of it.
In a past life, I lived in North Wales for 4 years.
Yeah.
So.
What was it called there?
I lived in a large village called Roscleann na Gluglog.
That's a lovely part of New Zealand, isn't it?
Actually, all my sister-in-laws are Welsh.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, like, I come from this accent to, you're right, Chuck. So.
Tidy.
Yeah, exactly.
I've watched a lot of Gavin and Stacey, and that's it, so.
Everybody has.
Yeah.
Explain about your time in Wales. How did that happen?
So, you know, David's dad's Irish, but from Carlow, and his mum's Welsh. Mm. And so his mum's, like, a fluent Welsh speaker. So Welsh was her first language.
Okay.
So staunch kind of Welsh, and she was a Jones, so staunch Welsh family from North Wales. So they live in North Wales still.
Yeah.
So when I met Dave in Kalgoorlie in Western Australia, when we were like coming back, we were the first couple not married to stay in his parents' house.
Oh, shook.
Like even Phil, my brother-in-law, who's like 10 years older than me, had to sleep on the fold-out couch. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Oh, no, there was a lot of hater eyes when I moved into that house. Oh, yeah.
And a lot of Welsh being spoken that you were like...
Yes.
Okay.
And loads of sign eyes.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, of course we moved in with them because I think the mum was like, right, he's met this girl, either they're going to go to New Zealand or I want my baby back,
yes.
You know, because Dave's a sweetheart, so you can imagine that. One of the favourites.
Yeah.
So accommodate in every way possible to make sure he does not go all the way back down under.
Yeah, exactly.
Very clever.
And so then how had you chosen to either hang on there or head over to Ireland?
So it was a real roundabout trip. So I met Dave in 2000 in Kalgoorlie at $2 bourbon night.
I love these names.
Very romantic.
Yeah. Best way to meet someone though.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. And I didn't know anything about Wales or Ireland, and all he knew was All Blacks about New Zealand. And it was really funny because I remember like meeting Dave, and I remember like, you know, obviously after quite a lot of $2 bourbons, going to the mirror to check myself out, going, oh my god, girl, I think he's looking at you. Stop it, I think he's actually looking at you. And so then a million years later, we're still together. And so, yeah, that was $2 bourbon night. So anyway, so we, between that, that was in Western Australia. So we moved, then I got a job on an island called Rottnest Island. So we lived on basically a tropical island off the coast of Australia for 6 months and saved up for my UK visa. And so we moved to Wales. Then we had 3 or 4 years there, got married there. And then I was like, I'm really homesick. I need to move home, have children, settle down, the whole lot. Got home, realised a tin of fucking anchovies were like $27. And I was like, I'm not learning anything here. All the really good chefs are still in Europe. I'm like too young to be a head chef. I was like 24. So I kind of skedaddled back to Ireland because Dave had an Irish visa.
Yeah.
So we got dropped off in St. Stephen's Green and I walked straight into Thornton's, basically. And I remember Kevin Thornton interviewing me and he was like, what's fine dining food in New Zealand? I didn't understand a word he said. And I was like, well, like as much as I knew about Ireland, like I remember going to Kinsale and getting like a chicken breast with red pepper coulis on a black hexagon plate. And I was like, well, what's fine dining in Ireland?
Yeah. You've passed a test.
Yeah. And then I remember being in Dunn's and he rung me and it was like winning the lottery. And he was like, yeah, you can start like next week. Amazing. I was like, yes. Wow. Yeah.
How long had you spent there then?
Had a year there, basically, yeah, give or take, yeah.
And then what was your next move?
Well, then I was watching the Vulture Island adverts on the TV and they were trying to, like, repopulate the West. Mm. And I was like, move to the West. And it had, like, white sandy beaches and I was like, where's that? And Dave,
this looks great.
Dave used to holiday in Salt Hill, like, back in the day when they lived in Carlo, yeah. You know. Staycations were, like, really trendy.
Yeah, and so glamorous.
Yeah, so glam. Yeah. And, so then basically moved to the West over a TV advert.
Effective?
Yes.
Very effective. Was it the Vulture Ireland, like, with the Cranberries playing in the background? Because they were really effective in those days. Or was it the Heathers?
That was earlier, you know?
The Heathers, yeah.
Could have been.
Need to Heathers go, need to get away from everything. That one.
Yes, that was it.
That was it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're gone, weren't they? No? I don't know anything about music. But look, hello, I like Eurovision, so of course I don't know anything about music. But
No.
Me
neither.
Yeah, so... That's an inspiration that had managed to get you over here, and you haven't looked back since, really, have you?
That was it. No, not really. And, like, I just remember moving here going, oh, my God, this produce is amazing. Like, so...
Yeah, naturally.
It was a perfect home for you.
Oh, yeah.
So here we are in Kai, which is the hottest place in Galway, let's face it. And you're like, no, it's not. And you're like, it is, and it's such a popular spot.
Yeah.
For people to come along to, and I think every time that we have ever said we're going to Galway, it's like, you're going to Kai.
Yeah.
And it is a real testament to that. And you say about produce, that's at the heart of everything that you do.
Oh no, that's it. Like, produce and the people that grow it and everything like that, for me, is everything.
Mm.
Like, as far as I'm concerned, they do all the hard work. I'm just, you know, I'm just a facilitator that puts it on a plate. So... I really look at myself like that, and I actually really love cooking for people, not for myself. So I think that's a real kind of a different aspect of looking at it. And, like, you know, like, I really do follow a slow food ethos. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be organic, as long as it's local. Like, if you're growing spuds, and okay, they're from down the road, I'd rather get spuds from down the road, you know. Yeah. So that's it. Like, that's the most important part of it. Is supporting a local economy as well. Because we opened in the recession, we had like €3.10 in the bank. I remember that because we went to buy a pint and we had no money in our bank account.
Wow. Been there recently.
That's why everything's made of scaffolding boards and everything's kind of recycled, because it was 2010. We bought the scaffolding boards off a dude that we met in a lay-by on a motorway for €5 each.
Wow.
Yeah. So the ladder was a friend's ladder. We couldn't afford a blackboard, so we just painted that and realised we could write on it with chalk. The only thing that I had was a picture of my nana. And then Steve, our architect, made the frame out of skirting boards for us.
That is such a beautiful picture.
Yeah. And I was named after her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I'm Jessica Marguerite, and that's Marguerite Lockwood. And she's actually from Louth.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Really? What?
Louth, Tyrone, and Maori. Yeah.
Now, that's a combination. Yeah. I'm just bloody Louth.
Yeah. He doesn't have the accent. She didn't have the accent, though, no.
No. She's a proper Kiwi, like.
Okay, good.
Because, yeah. Jesus, I don't know if in New Zealand they'd understand what 14 was or anything like that. Stop putting your head in your hands. I'm allowed to mock the loud accent,
I guess, as you're a blow-in. So talk to us about Kai's ethos, or the everything that underpins everything at Kai.
Ethos. I hate it when people ask me what the ethos is. God knows.
It's like you need a diary with it written down, is it?
Just like, I don't know, I just... Yeah. Ethos. Okay. So basically, slow food is the ethos and supporting our economy. So if you look at the block that we're on, so we have the laundrette on the corner, we have the newsagents across the road. So we buy our Irish Times from the newsagents across the road. We have our laundry done on the corner. We get our spuds from Ernie's. Health and Herbs make our teas, our herbal teas. James Sear, who's from, he's a shoemaker and stuff like that, fixes everything for us. Not only shoes, but everything else. And basically it was keeping our community above water when we really opened. So that's the ethos, is like surviving and creating a community and watching people grow, like, yeah. So I suppose that's it, really.
Yeah, that's an honourable one, because, you know, one helps the other and helps the other, and it just makes this area flourish in the end.
I think so. I mean, like, I bought a house 1 minute around the corner, so I actually live and work in the Goy, you know, the West End. So I kind of, like, go for pints here. I don't really cross the bridge. Yeah, and it's just a brilliant neighbourhood to, like, belong to. And obviously, being a foreigner, like, they've really, like, looked after me. Like, on a Sunday, because, I mean, we have a tiny freezer inside. Like, on a Sunday when Ernie's is closed, Mike lets us put our Paco Jack containers underneath the Donegal catch in the shop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is community embodiment.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. And, like, I say that to people all the time and people don't believe me. And I was like, no, it's in a Paco Jack container underneath a Donegal catch or the skinny fries. And for me, that's brilliant, because I'm not a food snob. And I actually hate food snobbery. So it's my pet hate.
Good. Because that's completely our, let's say that, is that our ethos as well then? Food snobbery, it's pointless.
Yeah, no,
I think
food is for the people.
Because we've talked about this before, that you adore when we deep fry anything.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. Food is not for the elite, it's for the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it's you have to put it in perspective. Like, we have a soup on during the weekdays because we know loads of people, like our teachers. There's loads of doctors down the street. So, you know, we make it our ethos to have something on for €6. We have two pieces of brown bread with quinoa butter and a homemade soup for €6.
Happy days.
I want to provide at lunchtime an affordable lunch. Whether or not you can choose to have something that was like $14.50 or whatever, but I just want to have that item on the menu to sustain people, you know.
Because it is the great, I was going to say the great leveler, but that's death, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the thing that unifies everyone. We all have the same need. We all have to eat at the end of the day.
We do, yeah.
Yeah. And many cases, 3-4 times a day. Yeah. So if there is a level of elitism with it, you instantly are making it inaccessible for people and making it permanently inaccessible for people. And I suppose having the cheaper option in that kind of way to sustain people.
I think when we first opened, me and Dave really, really just wanted to keep that soup on. And the soup is the most important part for me. So the soup is, every person that starts here is like, I'm like, I know in other places soup's not really important, but here it really means everything to us. So, I mean, even though it's the most basic bitch thing on the menu, it has to be amazing, you know.
Favourite flavours?
Oh, pumpkin and blood orange, celeriac and apple. Oh, loads. Yeah.
Loads.
So as a couple operating a joint thing, and also us operating our joint thing, we get asked all of the time, how do you manage it? And I'm gonna ask you the same thing. How do you, as a couple, eke out your own spaces?
Oh, well, me and Dave are like totally in love. That doesn't actually happen to us.
Of course. Yeah. I knew it.
No, we are the perfect couple. Yeah. No, basically, you become John and Mary or Father Ted.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, yeah, how's it going? I've told you not to do that. I told you we have no pork left. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Smile.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going? Hello. Good morning, Father. I don't know. For me, I don't really get involved on the floor. So I'm always in the kitchen. I work 12 hours a day. So I'm in there. So when I'm in there, I just focus on food. I don't really focus on anything else. And for me, the most important part is getting the food out and making sure the customer's okay. And vice versa, Dave's job is making sure that people feel welcome, they're okay, they're not rushed, and people have an enjoyable time. So, you know, I know it's cheesy, but it's like one dream, one team. Like, And we don't have that like front of house, back of house divide. Like it's, we all do it as a big kind of wheel. Like,
yeah.
And if shit's going down out the front, you'll see all the chefs out the front polishing glasses, you name it, serving people, talking to people at the front door, the whole lot. And same when we're under pressure, the guys at the floor will just stand there at the pass and talk to us and talk us through it. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's it. And yeah, it's not a competition. The whole point is getting the customer to enjoy their experience as much as possible. And that's all I've ever wanted.
And from the kitchen to the newspaper, the Irish Times, how did that happen? You've been in it a half year.
6 months now, yeah.
And how is it going?
It's going great. Adulting is very hard. Writing recipes is it's a lot harder than you think it is. I left school at 16, so I have no higher education. I've had to teach myself how to use a computer, to copy and paste, to charge the computer when you get home, because it dies halfway through when you're writing recipes. I've got, well, a mild form of dyslexia, so I actually have to get quite a lot of help to edit my articles. So yeah, for me it's really hard. I'm really enjoying it though, and I try and put myself forward, you know, as much as I can. And I try and make things that I think other people will make, all part and parcel of not being a food snob either. So if I can mention something that's affordable, like Velvet Cloud yogurt, with something else that's like, you know, something like Hoggett or something like that, that a family, I really family focus my articles. So I try and like write down, because I was raised by a solo mum, I try and like make sure my articles are affordable for either solo mums, solo dads, families that are on a low income, all that kind of stuff. So I really kind of, you know, if there's 50 grams of cheese, then use a good cheese, you know, whether or not you shop in Aldi, Lidl, Tesco, Marks and Spencer's.
Yeah.
So I just, yeah, I try and keep it for the people as well.
And how do you find developing the recipes? Because it must be very different doing it in a professional kitchen to then thinking, right, how does it go into paper, into a newspaper for a small number of people?
Yeah, no, it's really hard cooking. Yeah. Like, I think our total is like for four people, so for a family of four, basically. So, yeah, it is really hard because, you know, we used to like, sure, get 5 kilos,
yeah.
You know, and 10 kilos of blah, 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 and it's easy. So, yeah, you have to really break it down. So you kind of have to make it at home before you even write about it in the Times.
And styling and photography, how do you find that?
Food styling is fine. Photography, I surprisingly enough, naturally good at it. I had to become really good at social media because we actually couldn't afford anyone when we first opened. So I actually just became good at it,
yeah.
And I think if you approach it without like a snobby kind of thing, because you know you see people's Instagram pages and they're all like cut and clipped in black and white or whatever, and you're just like, man,
a theme.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, no, mine's like wonky cakes, like stuff that's exploded or spuds or you know, like. Yeah, I just keep mine as normal as possible, yeah.
And it's a proper eagle-eyed view of you as a chef.
Yeah, it's really behind the scenes because I take all the photos in the now, in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I think if you really love what you're doing or you love something and you take a photo of it, then that's it.
Yeah.
And is there a cookbook on the horizon?
Still waiting for a publisher.
Okay.
Mm.
Any day now?
No. I don't know. Well, I mean, obviously, we'd love an Irish publisher.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'd love to be able to sell, because Kai means food in Maori, I'd love to be able to sell the book in New Zealand as well.
Yeah.
So I'd love that to, like, the Irish-New Zealand connection to tie in together.
100%.
Yeah. So, I don't know, I'm really looking for a publisher that could do that, that has connections, that would have the connections in New Zealand as well.
Speaking of New Zealand, I'm sorry for sounding like Kevin Thornton here, but what is the food of New Zealand?
Well, I think, I don't know, New Zealand's a tricky one, and I don't know if I went back home and opened Kai in New Zealand, would it have the same effect? And I think about this all the time, because obviously your dream is like moving home, right? And you guys did it. And then sometimes the rose tinted shades come off and you're like, fire out, I'm home. And this is it. See, in New Zealand, everyone's a bloody good cook. I mean, like 6 months of the year, you're cooking outside. Like, you have barbecues the whole time. Like, and when people, like, see stuff, like the Cuisine magazine in New Zealand, like, people, like my dad, my uncles, that are, like, 65, subscribe to that. And they're making ceviche. They're, like, they eat everything. So they're actually really good home cooks. So, you know, we don't have the culture of eating out. So going to a restaurant or a winery or something like that, it's not really in our culture. So, yeah, weird. No, it is totally weird. But then people would spend all day making a dessert, a homemade dessert at home.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, me too. And my Auntie Joss is a freaking legend. Like, she makes everything from scratch, like lamingtons, the whole lot.
Lamington. Oh, God, I haven't had a lamington in the longest time.
Yeah.
They're amazing. What would her speciality be other than lamingtons? Just every kind of dessert?
Any kind of dessert, ice creams, but like they bake like whole fish with rice, smoked oyster baskets with, you know, like sliced white pan rolled out, brushed with butter, and like, oh yeah, she's just brilliant. Oh,
can we come over sometime, please?
I talked about Auntie Joss today in the article, that's why I was like, oh.
Clean your mind.
Yeah.
In the meze.
Yeah. Mothering meze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess if we talk about Irish food and Irish food in general, I think the thing that's on everybody's mind at the minute is Irish food as a cuisine has a huge opportunity to be globally known.
Mm.
But we need to focus on what Irish food actually is.
Yeah.
And I think the problem that we have is that all of us who have grown up here are too immersed in it and can't really see from an outsider's view our cuisine. So you, as an immigrant, you have a fresh eye over the Irish.
Oh no, totally.
Irish scene. So, in your opinion, what is Irish food?
Well, for me, like especially opening a business, I've used that so much, like because I'm like, you guys have salt marsh lamb here. You have lamb that grazes on seaweed, and no one's really marketing that. You know, especially obviously living in Wales and living in Australia and stuff like that. Like the amazing, like, yeah, from like seaweed to everything like that. Like, it's just really exciting. Like, and I think we need to kind of stay away from the, what one of my pets, I'm just going to talk about my pet hate. Is people describing Irish food as terroir. Okay, that's a French word, okay? We're talking about from bog to seashore. We're talking about Irish food. There must be a Irish word for it. You know, yeah.
And if the likes of the mother folklore type people are making words, more modern words, up and kind of consulting as to what they should be.
Or creating.
Yeah, well, not create as a word that embodies it.
Yeah. No, totally. And I mean, I like to get away from, I'll probably get killed here. I like to get away from the buttermilks with the oils floating on top of it, and I'm allergic to tweezers. So, like when chefs start here, I'm like, is that tweezers in your pocket? And I was like, I never want to see them again. Yeah.
Burn them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, what are, seriously, like, piss off. Mm. You've got given to, you know, like, you've got hands, use them. Yeah, Irish food, I mean, like, the embodiment of Irish food is anything. Like, I mean, Rory O'Connell is, like, my iconic food hero. Anything he makes me melt. Like, just, I'm just like, you know, when he cooks something, you look at yourself and you're like, oh my God, I've been so stupid mixing up all these stupid flavors. Oh my God. And he makes a like mutton and barley broth. And you're like suddenly in heaven. You're raised up to that other level. But I think it's like, I think it comes with age as well. Like I just turned 40 in February. So, but like, you know, like when you look at like Alder Flower and you watch your local environment and stuff like that closely, I don't know, like, Irish food is the best food in the world. When I'm, like, and, like, I'm a staunch New Zealander as well. When I'm home in New Zealand, because I have two homes, when I'm home in New Zealand, I miss Irish butter. I miss Ireland. And for me, that took a long time to admit. Yeah, I miss the food. Because there's a certain love that I think is in Irish food. You know when somebody makes you a cup of tea and they really love you, or they're trying to mind you, they make you a cup of tea and they put a sugar in it. Like, you can't beat that flavour. You know, whether or not it's that, or they boil your spuds, or they make you something when you're hungry. Like, the Irish have that. There's a certain forgivingness in Irish food. It's really hard to explain, but yeah, I think from the produce to the way that people cook it.
And it's always served with love when it's home cooked as well.
Oh yeah, never mind the slops on the side of the plate, who cares?
Yeah.
Peeling the spuds at the table.
Oh,
you know, like that kind of stuff.
Well, watching the news, why not?
Yeah, the evangelist.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if we talk about Galway, you've obviously seen it transform over the years. I mean, anyone who grew up in Ireland would probably say in their childhood that here was never about food, and it's blossomed into a destination for food. How?
Sure, I moved here 13 years ago. You couldn't even sell razor clams or mussels. Yeah.
That's actually quite incredible, because it's on the Wild Atlantic Way with the most amazing seafood.
No, I know. And I can get 8 kilos of razor clams today and sell out today.
Mm.
So, I mean, we've always had, like, you know, the likes of people from Boffin. We've always had that, you know, like, really class kind of fish eaters. Like, we've always had that. But I don't know what happened. It wasn't a sudden change, but slowly. I remember writing menus, and I was like, right, if I can just write this menu and I can put two things on it that are bizarre, whether or not it's sheep's cheese or whatever, I'm just going to slowly start doing that. And that's basically what I've been doing for the last 14 years.
And it works.
Yeah.
And keep doing it.
Yeah.
Please.
And so, but, like, I mean, we're surrounded by universities. Like, we've got a lot of educated people here. The city's pretty bohemian. Like, I remember talking to Mike, who used to own the laundrette. Like, 50 years ago, he goes, American woman moved here. And he goes, I saw a real gap in the market. And I was like, what gap did you see? And he goes, well, they were used to laundrettes. They never did their washing. So I opened a laundrette because there was a load of, like, American tutors coming over to the universities. And, of course, they were bringing their wives and kids. And he saw a gap in the market.
That is genius.
Yeah, no, I know.
And that is so Galway.
Yeah, and so then we have the laundrette on the corner.
Still going strong?
Yeah.
Still going, yeah.
Yeah.
So Galway is your home. If you only had 24 hours left, how would you spend a day in Galway?
24 hours. Okay, probably go for... It has to surround alcohol, I guess. So, 24 hours left. Now, I would go to probably Sheridan's Wine Bar, because I used to be a cheesemonger for Sheridan's, so I don't know if you knew that.
No.
I used to work in Sheridan's.
For how long and when and where?
Well, I first moved to Galway. I was the head chef of Ard Beer.
Yes.
And then I needed to take a break, so I ended up going to Sheridan's, and I became a cheesemonger for 3 years.
Dream.
Oh
yeah.
My God, we need to explore this more.
Yeah. So, and obviously I worked with Ender McAvoy there.
Yeah.
So we're one big kind of family. So I'd have to go to Sheridan's, and then I'd go for Loam for dinner. And then I'd probably go to John and Cole's place, and because Cole always makes me nachos.
Yeah.
When shit's going down and shit's wrong, you go to Cole and he microwaves your nachos and it makes the whole world way better.
Yeah.
Those two just, like, are my best friends and they've always got my back, so I'd have to do something with them. Obviously involving steps.
I know. It's nachos and steps. You can't have one without the other. I'm sorry.
No, I know. Yeah. It's like yin and yang.
Yeah,
my ultimate 24 hours in Galway. Yeah, that and a walk in Salt Hill.
Beautiful.
Mm. Absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. Now tell us more about the cheese.
Okay.
So that's a really nice day. Yeah.
Anyway.
Cheese.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. So I want that job, basically.
Yeah.
So how, you know, how do you learn everything about the wide selection that's there, and how do you...
Okay, so you know when you start there, they give you a folder and you have to learn, like, basically the basics of cheese. So they gave me a basic folder on 120 European raw milk cheeses that I had to study.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Easy.
And I still have that folder, by the way. Oh, I don't know if we were supposed to take it home. Sorry, Kevin and Seamus. So they basically teach you that.
Yeah.
They teach you the difference between Parma and Toscana to Serrano to Iberico. It's just the ultimate job. And, like, you know, I'd just gone from running two really busy restaurants and not really seeing my husband that much. So to hang out with Dave at night and obviously learn more about European cheeses and meats and stuff like that was amazing.
So your ultimate... three Irish cheeses.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Sorry.
Number one in the world, and I still think she's the best cheesemaker in the whole wide world, is Silke Krop from Korolegi.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably the most talented woman that I've ever seen on the raw milk scene. Like, I think this woman should be, like, studied. Like, absolutely studied at a university level. What her and Tom are doing is absolutely mind-blowing to me. So I'm just going to put them in categories, because obviously Silke is really good at a good range of cheeses. When it comes to a hard cheese, I'd have to say Coulatin. Tom Burgess is like the rain man when it comes to cloth-bound cheddar. And then I'm gonna have to say Young Buck.
I knew that was coming.
Young Buck was on the way.
And it's so good, isn't it? We have a lump of it in the fridge at home, and I'm like, I can't wait to go home and eat that.
Well, for 12 years, me and Dave have been volunteering for COS, which is the Cheesemaking Association of Ireland.
Mm.
So we've been volunteering. Yeah, we go over to Italy, and me and Dave work. We donate our time to representing raw milk Irish cheeses. So we work on the stall, we sell them and stuff like that, and give the cheesemakers time to kind of smooth and meet people and sell their cheese. So me and Dave met Mike. Mike had basically pumped all the money he had to bring the cheese over, and I think Sheridan's basically gave him a hand, put them on the same pallet or whatever. Mike had no money, he was couch surfing in Bra, Vermonte, waking up every day, eating a slice of pizza, and then no one works hard like that dude. So I remember me and Dave were like, mum and dad, like, so we were like, have you been to Barolo? And he was like, no. And we were like, we'll pick you up, and we took him for an ice cream. Because he had no car. He had no car at the time. And so I remember, like, us, like, going, okay, come on, Mike, we'll go for a tour, like.
Yeah.
And I just remember, like, us and Barolo having a gelato with Mike, and Mike being delighted that he sold all his cheese, like, and now he's just, like, this fucking superstar.
Absolutely.
And rightly so. It's just one of the most incredible cheeses, and a great story as well about how it is being sold to France, and the French are like, this is amazing.
Yeah, and Berlin, like, the Berliners are, like, all over it.
Mm.
And now he has a shop and everything in Belfast. It's great.
It's an incredibly interesting and unique cheese as well.
Mm.
So, yeah,
he's
incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like, can you think of a blue cheese like it?
No.
Apart from me, like, the natural kind of penicillin in it is like pear drops.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really fruity, but not in a Roquefort kind of way.
Yeah.
It's, like, really kind of bizarre, like, I've never tried a cheese like it.
Mm.
And you can't even say it's like Siltner. It's not.
No.
You know.
It's very, very different.
Very unique.
Yeah.
Cheese that stops you in your tracks and go,
it's not like anything else.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to describe, like.
I just love how you light up when you talk about food like that. It's like, tell me your story, and you're like, whatever. But then it's like, food, cheese, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Think of your favourite places to eat in this country, because we are so blessed to have the best restaurants. Where do you love?
Apart from Colin John's.
The cabaret show that is Nachos and Steps, yes.
Yes. Yeah. See, I love different places for different reasons. If I could just move in with Rory O'Connell, by the way, Rory, I'm available anytime if you listen to this.
I'm sure he's an avid listener.
I bet you'll get a message now going, I am though.
I hope I do.
I don't know, like, okay, probably Takashi's place. Yeah. I can never say it properly. Ichiguchi.
Yeah.
I love Mike at the Greenhouse. Mm-hmm. He has a no bullshit approach to food as well, even though his food is very pretty.
Yeah.
I have those two, and then Vaughan's in Liscannor. Oh my god, the fish and chips. Oh my god.
So on our Instagram, on our trip out west over the past 3 or 4 days, that has come up over and over and over and over.
Me and Dave, on our days off, drive out there. Vaughan's in Liscannor is magical.
I need this. You just say chips to me and kryptonite, you know.
No, no.
Fish.
Like, the batter that they use is like 30 years old. It's like a sourdough batter without being wankers. Like, I'm not really a sourdough person. I don't really like it.
Yeah.
Controversial. Yeah. No.
You do brunch. What is wrong with you?
Gloss over that fact that I deserve.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no. I just don't see the point.
Is it the crunch? Is it the smell? Is it the...
Well, I think eating sourdough is really for young people because it rips the gums out of you. It doesn't make a decent sandwich because it's got holes in it. And kind of all your shit just falls out in it. Yeah, I mean, I respect its craft. And the fact you're looking after something for a really long time is like having kids, I guess.
Or having a high-maintenance boyfriend like me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Or girlfriend or wife like Dave. Yeah. So, yeah. Don't see the point.
You're like, you're going to leave now.
I know, yeah. I mean, yeah, give me brown cider bread any day over sourdough. Yeah. Like, if I was ever to open a bakery, it wouldn't be sourdough. It would be soda bread.
Mm.
Like... And it was really funny because I remember meeting like this French dude that's like really famous on Instagram, has like 200 million followers or whatever. And I was like, I'm from Ireland, basically, with this accent. I was like, I'm from Ireland. We have the best brown bread ever. And he goes, do you make it with like a natural leaven? And I was like, no, bread soda. And he was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so bad for you. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, bread soda hasn't like killed... the population that populated the world.
Yes.
Yet, you know. So, you know, like, I don't know, I'm really staunch into our soda bread. Yeah, and I'll give you a loaf of ours. Yeah.
That is a hill to die on, for sure. Yeah. Standing up for soda bread in Ireland,
yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I am. Like, I would stand up for a brown soda over anything. Like.
So, we are approaching the time for Kai's... key time over lunch, I guess, and there's probably a queue snaking up the street as we speak. So obviously Kai is iconic. How are you planning the next few years?
I don't know. I think I'm kind of be like, you know, one of those like fat racehorses that like retire to a golden field in Meath or something.
Not really many nice fields in Meath, though.
I don't know. I like the fields of Meath.
And Louth.
No.
And the Louth. Yeah, around there. I don't know. I'm just going to retire and like just eat at Eastern Seaboard the whole time.
I'll join you.
Yeah. For the rest of my life. Oh my God, I didn't even mention them in my favourite restaurants.
What? I think that's because you haven't come and experienced
2.0.
ESB 2.0.
Look, I love number one. Like, yeah, but I mean, I love Reuven's cooking. Like, and Jenny is just a unicorn. I love her so much. And I remember finding them. I remember, like, following them on Instagram going, oh, my God, who are these people? They're exactly like me. they are like me. Yeah, they're exactly the same. Like, 100%. And I was like, who are they? And then stuff they'd make, I'd either make it or, you know, unintentionally we were like living in this like vortex of like, that's cool, that's cool, that's cool, that's cool, that's cool. Oh my God. And so I remember like saying to Dave, I was like, right, we have a meeting in Dublin. I was like, I want you to drive me to Eastern Seaboard. So I remember sitting outside Kai and putting in the GPS, Eastern Seaboard, and we just drove there. And I think
that
I ate a...
true love.
Yeah, yeah. No, no. And I was like, I have to go there. And I walked in and I was like, hey. And they were like, what? Tell us you're coming. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize until I was sitting outside Kai that I really wanted to go there. But I remember it was the same... I went there when... the same day as when I won Best Chef in Ireland for the RAI. And I remember like just sitting there, like just talking to everybody, and they were like, oh, congratulations. I was like, have you been to Eastern Seaboard? I was like, have you been to Eastern Seaboard? I was like, I went there. It's amazing. Like, all I could talk about all night was like, I went to Eastern Seaboard and ate a whole chicken before I came here. It was unreal. Like, yeah.
It is. We, you know, obviously we're on the podcast in the previous series, and anyone who follows us knows that we will bleat on till our dying breath about how much we love it, and it is a great, great local restaurant.
Massive fangirl, yeah.
And speaking of awards, recently, try not to timestamp too much, but recently the Best Chef in Connacht as well. And recently, of course, the Blas na Héireann Producers Champion Award, which is a huge, huge deal, I'm sure.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that was... I got the phone call from Artie and Fallon and the day after I turned 40.
Oh.
And for me, and I don't know if they knew I was like immortally hungover, but for me, I remember like crying and telling Dave, and I was like, I can't believe it, because they are such an amazing family. On top of what they do, representing like the whole food scene, I had fangirled them for years. I don't know if they knew that or not. I had fangirled them for years, and every time the Blas na Héireann Awards were on, I used to follow hardcore on Twitter, because whoever won the awards were my new suppliers. And so it was a really smart idea. But then to be chosen, and they were like, so the way they were on the phone, they were like, yep, it was kind of unanimous, Jess. And I was like, no way. And, you know, there's certain things that surprise me about this country, like, and because obviously I feel like I'm Irish and part of this country now, but you know, to not be from here and to get that as well is just another kind of really special achievement for me. It means it's probably the most highest accolade I think I have actually got. Yeah, to this date, yeah.
Well, it's really well deserved, and you know, there's no one who can doubt your absolute love for the produce of this country.
Yeah.
And your menus, your social media, your presence. You made the point in the car as well about how you use your time for three specific things.
I mean, like, we thought on our long drive here through Clare, we thought, so how do we talk about Jess as a chef and an entity in food? And it was more than just food. It was more than just a chef. It was more about, you're an activist around food. You're an educator around food. And then the collaboration of other chefs and other schemes and a community is more the things that we think when we think of you.
Oh, that's amazing. Like, yeah, no, it is, but it's so much more than food. Food is like the United Nations. Like, you don't need languages. When you're talking about food, you don't need to speak the same language. So for me, that's super important as well. And I mean, obviously, activism is my number one thing. And obviously, it started with the marriage equality referendum. And then my proudest moment to start is my first ever vote in Ireland was for the Vote Yes campaign, and I campaigned as well. I stood in Era Square, basically giving people recipes and Yes pamphlets. So I'm really, like, I cried when the marriage equality thing passed. Like, I've been here, I think, for the most important political time and Ireland. It's really Martin Luther King moments for this country, like, and I don't know, I just feel really proud to be a part of it, and all I can do is, like, do my best to represent Ireland, because it is the best. Like, when I go to Copenhagen, I'm sorry, I mean, it's very Instagrammable, but when I go to Copenhagen and people are like, oh, the seaweed, you know, it's like truffle, and I'm like, yeah, no shit, we have that on, we have shitloads of that on the west coast of Ireland. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. What are you, yeah, and, yeah. And I'm like, oh.
Seabook thorn, it's like, yeah, we know, we have loads of it.
Yeah, we know, yeah, it tastes like passion fruit. Yeah, you know, like, there's nothing, you know, and like, heaps of people, like, I remember going to Noma and stuff like that, and I mean, Noma, it was brilliant, like, it still is. But I just remember going, yeah, no, we have all this at home. We have this at home.
I have to travel all the way to Copenhagen for the fabulousness.
No, and why are you calling it virgin butter when it's just butter?
Well, actually, you know? You've just reminded us, Copenhagen, yes. Of the time you blew our cover almost.
Oh, my God, a Max burger.
Oh, no, that's another one. That's what's blowing your cover. When so we, in 2018, we travelled around Sweden for 6 weeks.
Oh, yes.
But we had to leave Sweden for a couple of days because it was my mom's 60th birthday. And we were like, well, we don't want Instagram to look like we've left the trip and all this type of stuff. So we were still in Sweden for 3 days. Now, yeah. Everyone's like, oh, my God, were you going over for a surprise for your mother? It's like, no. I told her I'm coming home and everything. It was also Snowmageddon, so our flight in landed in Belfast and all this type of stuff. And I think we're at the end of our tether and we're like, just get us back to Sweden soon. Please get us back to Sweden. And then we get a message from you on Instagram saying, how's the weather over there? And I went, that's a bit of a weird message. And I just kind of looked around and went, shit, she's blown our cover. You ruined it.
I know, yeah.
But we never, this is the first public declaration of that ever, so don't worry. Then Max Burger.
Yes.
Malmö.
Yes.
Yes.
A blur.
An absolute blur.
Mm.
Do you remember that night at all?
Yes, yeah. Kind of. I remember Holly Dalton convincing me that this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say is it's hardly Supermax now.
Ooh,
I'm a big
fighting talk.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'm a big Supermax fan.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the Mighty Mac is better than the Big Mac.
Okay, which is yeah.
I'll take that.
Yeah, I'll take that too. Irish pride and all that.
Yeah.
But Max Burger, yeah. It's funny because there's a whole group of people who we kind of all now bump into from time to time. Like, we met Holly at All Together Now, and she was like, oh, yeah, Max Burger.
Yeah.
And it's just this thing that is like, there's about 5 or 6 people in the Irish food industry who we are going, yeah, did we meet before, didn't we? Yeah. Max Burger. Yeah. Malmö.
At, like, 12:30 at night, yeah. In the middle of this.
Yes. I think it was later. It was later because I ordered hollandaise in a packet, so it was way later than 12.
And that is the signal of it's after midnight.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Thank you for coming on.
Wait, I have one more.
Go.
Yeah. So in 2 weeks I'm flying over to Beirut and Jordan with the Irish Refugee Council, and we're actually going to visit. Refugee camps, and we're actually going to meet quite a lot of people that are being rehomed in Ireland. So I'm going over there to be, hey, you know, I'm an immigrant.
Oh, excellent.
From Ireland, yeah. And I've got like my book of counties and stuff like that. So.
Oh my God, like the like Irish primary school geography books.
Yeah.
Are fantastic.
Yeah.
Newgrange and Doldrums and the Burren and all that.
That was obviously probably the most. Well, after Blast Aaron, that is the other most exciting thing.
Fantastic. We're looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
And you are the perfect person.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Just make sure you bring, like, loads of goodies over.
I don't know. I think people, like, approach the refugee thing as in, like, eek, you know.
Well, let's just think of us Irish, you know. We are everywhere in the world at the end of the day.
Exactly.
And we have an approach where basically we hope the rest of the world welcomes us with open arms, and by right there should be vice versa as well. That's just our opinion.
I mean, like, when you look at the positives, imagine 15 to 20 years from now, imagine our cuisine. If we can get people that are opening restaurants, which refugees would do, because I mean, look at all the look at Australia.
Yeah.
Like, there was no food in Australia until the 70s, yeah. And that's when, like, basically the floodgates opened and a load of people, Italians, Greeks, all sorts, moved over and just immersed themselves in Australian cuisine, like Kylie Kwong, like, you know, third generation Chinese Australian, like, just totally kicked the food scene up its whole, like. So I can't wait for that to happen to Ireland. And it's, you know, it's going to be an exciting time. But for me, the most important thing is if, like, we can get them using Irish food, Irish produce, it's going to be kick-ass. I mean, look at Tekashi. Like, well, look what he's doing. And I'm like, respect your culture. Don't forget Kewpie mayonnaise.
Absolutely not. Oh, no.
And Kit Kats. I remember when he opened Ichigo, I just bought him like 20 red Kit Kats because that's like really good. It's good luck in Japan to be given that. And I was like, there you go. And he was like, what's that? And I was like, pair of Kai socks and like 20 Kit Kats. And I was like, you're going to win a Michelin star.
Kit Kats made it happen.
Jess Murphy, thank you so much.
We could have talked for absolutely hours, but it's a Saturday morning here in Kai with a busy service ahead that evening. So as Jess pops on her chef whites and heads into the kitchen, we've got something to ask.
Yes, we hope you've enjoyed listening to this first edition of Chew the Fat, and we've got so many more exciting episodes to bring you every single Friday of this season. You hopefully know by now that we are a totally free and independently produced podcast. It is really just us and a microphone. So if you wish to support us, we'd love if you could share, rate and review Chew the Fat on whatever platform you listen to us on.
But we've also set up a Buy Me a Coffee account. Basically, this is a quick hat tip type of donation, a small gesture showing support and sheltering a small portion of the costs of producing this podcast. You can find out more on buymeacoffee.com/chewthefat.
For more episodes of Chew the Fat, for recipes, food features and travel guides, please check out our website, gastrogaze.com.